So I'm going to be talking about opportunities for technology-based HIV prevention in Cape Town, South Africa. I'd like to thank my co-authors, Drs. Kelvin Mwaba, Nicolette Robin, Ronwin Rui, Tanya Prescott, and Sheena Bull. Certainly, I'd also like to acknowledge our financial support from the National Institute of Mental Health, our collaborators at CIFER and the University of Western Cape, our consultant, Dr. Simbayi, and of course the schools and the participants for taking time to complete the survey. I am not very good at reading directions, so I do not have a slide like everybody else who is doing what they're supposed to do, so I will verbally state that I do not have any financial conflicts to declare. So you, we've started talking about this already, but the impact that HIV is having on South Africa is pretty mind-blowing. It's really hard to sort of really get a sense. Like, we sort of throw around numbers, and it's just, I think it's just so huge that it's hard to really wrap your arms around what it means. And so this statistic for me is perhaps the most compelling way to talk about how HIV is affecting the population in South Africa. And so they estimate that if the prevalence rate remains as it is today, that half of the 15-year-olds who are alive will die from AIDS-related diseases in their lifetime. And that is just amazing. So it's fair to say that we need to do more, that the need for effective HIV prevention programming cannot be overstated. And there are effective programs that exist. The problem is that they're just not accessible. So most of them are focused on sort of traditional models of facilitators and manuals, which means you have to have facilitators. It means you have to have the money to have, you know, building space, and people have to be able to come to the program. All of these sort of structural issues and facilitator issues that we know are impediments to access, they exist, and so instead, the majority of young people are getting their AIDS education through schools. It's sort of the U.S. equivalent of sex ed, and as we know here, having gone through sex ed, it's really not focused on, or even if it is, very good at changing behavior, right? So we may have higher levels of information as a result of the didactic learning in schools, but not a whole lot of HIV preventive behavior change. In addition, we can come up with the most effective program, and it can be super accessible. But if it's not really engaging and interesting to young people, then we've lost before we've even started. And so to really figure out what it is that young people want, you have to do a needs assessment to sort of figure out what their needs are, what's acceptable to them, so that we really are building a program that works for them as opposed to a program that we're really super excited about and they have no interest in at all. And so what we did in 2012 is we talked to, or surveyed rather, over 1,000 young people that were in 10th and 11th grades. We did a paper and pencil survey and then double data entered on the back end. Respondents were in one of three public high schools in predominantly black, lower income neighborhoods in Cape Town. These schools were purposefully identified, and we were purposeful in going to black lower-income communities because the HIV prevalence rate for blacks versus white is 13 times higher in South Africa, and those in lower-income lower-income neighborhoods also are at risk for HIV compared to higher SES. We asked a lot of questions. The survey took about 45 minutes. It was one class period. We asked them a lot of stuff about their experiences with HIV, information, and some ideas that they had about HIV prevention programming. So on average, our kids were about 17 and a half years of age. Most of them were between 16 and 18, but as is similar for many sub-Saharan African countries, you have sort of a skew. You've got some older kids because in some households, it's not about sort of what is chronologically appropriate, but what is financially feasible when you can send your kids to school. So we've got about 60% who are female. Purposefully, overwhelmingly, our kids were black, and 44%, the father had completed secondary school or less. So we did a pretty good job of getting a disadvantaged population in the survey. So with that backdrop, I was really surprised. So we asked young people whether or not they'd ever used text messaging and whether or not they'd used internet, and 81% of our kids said yes. They'd use text messaging, and yes, they'd use the internet. So even in this lower socioeconomic school, we've got really high technology access, which I think is really exciting because it means there's opportunity here, potentially to use technology in a way that is compelling. We've done work in Uganda, and I think that the text messaging accessibility is the same, but internet is not, and it has become a major impediment in terms of disseminating what we've done. So this was really super exciting. So then we said, okay, so if there was an HIV prevention program that were available in these ways or in these spaces, how likely would you be to actually access it? So we asked about internet and text messaging and email, and then religious organizations, because religion is a strong influence and part of people's lives in South Africa, and then also school. And so obviously we were surveying the schools. 75% of young people attend school, so there is a pretty high rate of attendance in Cape Town as well as South Africa. It's a pretty efficient way to reach adolescents in that country. And what we're really caring about is the lighter blue on the right-hand side. Those are kids who said, I'm extremely likely to access a program if it were available in that way. And then the purple is the somewhat. So it's sort of the blue and the purple is what we're really focused on. And what you can quickly see is that school is really where most kids said, yeah, if there was an HIV prevention program at school, it'd be really, I would be pretty likely to see, to access that program. And what's interesting is that internet is not that far behind. And when you then add in the purple, we see that school and religious organizations are the two most common places, and that internet continues to be sort of the third, the third most endorsed, but certainly in terms of technology, it's the one that most kids are interested in. So we wanted to look also by different subpopulations that may be at greater or lower risk for HIV. And as is true for many sub-Saharan African countries, females are at greater risk for HIV than males, and I think this is what we saw in the previous presentation as well. So we want to make sure that wherever we deliver this intervention, that we're going to be reaching those who are both at high risk as well as lower risk. And what's interesting to me is that the girls are at higher risk, but they're also much more likely to say that they're extremely or somewhat likely to be accessing these programs if they're available sort of all across the board, really. Their rates of endorsement and interest are much higher than males, except for internet, where it sort of equals out. We also asked young people what they thought their chances were for getting HIV, and they had three choices: below average, average, and above average. And so then we classified those who said above average as at risk for self-appraised, at risk for getting HIV. And what we found is that there's actually no significant differences in terms of interest across any of these. So that's good news. So no matter where we decide to, or however we decide to deliver this information, it seems like we're equally likely to get those who are self-appraised high risk versus other kids. We also asked about HIV prevention programming fatigue. So when you live in a country where almost one in five people are HIV positive, people talk about HIV. It is just part of the daily conversation. You talk about it at school, you talk about it at home, you're talking about it at church and everywhere else. And so we wanted to know whether or not kids are tired, right? And so we said, how strongly do you agree or disagree with the following statement? I'm tired of hearing about HIV prevention. And about one in three of our kids somewhat or strongly agreed with that statement. It's just a lot. And so what that means is that we've got to be really cognizant of that. It's not about whether or not the information they're getting is accurate or behavior changing. It's that they are overwhelmed with information, and so that whatever we deliver has to catch their attention, and maybe even say the same thing, but in a way that they can hear it for the first time. So we want to make sure that wherever we go, we're also getting the kids who are somewhat already tired of HIV prevention programming. And really what we're seeing is that there are some differences by school and internet. They're actually somewhat less likely than those who don't have fatigue to say that they would access it at school and at internet. But even for those kids who are fatigued, those are still two of the highest places where they're likely to access it among the places that we asked. So certainly, while this was really super useful in terms of helping us decide what the next steps were and where the opportunities were for us to deliver HIV prevention programming, it's really important to acknowledge that we purposefully selected these three schools. So whether or not we would see similar interest and access, technology access, if we were to go to other schools in Cape Town, let alone all of the rest of South Africa, is really unknown. I mean, it's likely that these aren't really that generalizable beyond maybe even low-income Cape Town. And that even though today, you know, what we talked about was really much more sort of generalized interest in HIV prevention programs, that it's still very stigmatized. When you talk about HIV, there's a lot of stigma still in South Africa. And that certainly for sexual behavior with adolescents, it's also a lot of stigma. So self-report may have been compromised in some way for those reasons. All of that said, you know, we certainly are excited about the level of access that these kids have in terms of both internet and text messaging. And we think that, you know, when we sort of look at the two, that internet seems to be more acceptable and therefore has perhaps a higher likelihood of engaging our young people. But because school is overwhelmingly across the board, you know, among all young people and then across all the subgroups, the most likely place where young people are to access a prevention program, that we would suggest and what we're going to hopefully be doing in the next couple of years will be developing an internet-based program that would be delivered in the schools. And so you basically take advantage of where young people are, their willingness to access information at the schools, but you do it in a way where you take the facilitator out of the equation and you take all of those other issues out of the equation, and all they have to do is really engage with a computer. And all of our schools have computers and internet, and of course it's sort of varying levels of how many computers actually work and all of that, but there's infrastructure that and reason for enthusiasm that this might actually be something that could be feasibly delivered in schools over time. So thank you very much. Oh, talked fast. Questions? Yeah.
How would that work with the existing Love Life curriculum in the schools, and how would that work in the bulk of South Africa's, you know, rural schools without internet access? Would you just be serving the urban populations, or would you have a system to extend this to rural?
Yeah. So there's two questions. The first is how would this work within the context of the existing sexual education that the kids have? And I think that this would be sort of an adjunct to, an add-on, and that there it would have a higher likelihood of being accepted if you don't try to change systems and say what we've got is way better than what you're doing, but instead talk about it as an enhancement, really, for young people. Then I think it's a lot more likely to be accepted by existing infrastructure. The other question was about sort of rural populations, rural schools that don't necessarily have internet, and what does that mean? I think that those schools probably look a lot more like what we see in Uganda, where there's not even necessarily electricity in the schools. And so I think that over time, internet and infrastructure will likely hopefully be disseminated there. I also think that there will never be one program that's going to work for every kid in South Africa specifically, but in all of Africa generally. And so I think the question is perhaps not what can we do that can be disseminated everywhere, but what can we do that's going to be disseminated, you know, that we can disseminate to a large enough population to make an impact here. So, for example, in urban centers, what can we do that would be influential there? And in rural centers, what can we do that would be influential there? And even when you think about content and how you're tailoring things, the scenarios and the situations and just the life that young people are having in rural settings is so different than urban. It would literally have to be a totally different program anyways. So I would say I wouldn't be developing it for rural kids. All right. Thanks, you guys. Thank you.